Hello and welcome. This is Andrea Boring, your host of Catholic Women Create, a weekly podcast featuring some insanely talented Catholic women who are creating gorgeous goods and sharing essential products and services designed to enhance your faith, your family, your home, or your business.
Friends, and welcome to episode 9 of Catholic Women Create. This is Andrea Boring, your host, and I'm just so thrilled that you could join us today. We have a great show on tap for you. It's been a couple weeks. Life is gotten in the way of things, as it sometimes does. My little rosary habit may or may not have gotten in the way of things. I don't know. I tell you what, it's so funny because if you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be making rosaries, that I would be podcasting or blogging or writing or doing any of these things, I would have told you you were crazy. I never considered myself creative. I never considered myself artistic at all. I never considered myself an entrepreneur. And, you know, it's kind of funny. The reason it all started, I can actually trace it back to one very specific instance, too, actually, of when I took that first leap, I guess, into business. And it's interesting how the Lord has his hand in everything. So I came back to the church in 2011. And shortly thereafter, I started my first blog called Twins Happen. And it was just a funny mom blog that I wrote about my boys, my older boys, because they were, what, 3, I guess, and life was just crazy. Of course, now, you know, I can laugh at myself because life is infinitely more crazy now with 5 kids and another set of twins than it was back then, but we all grow and learn, right? And so I started my blog shortly after I returned to the church in 2011, and that spring of 2012, I had decided that I was going to take a trip that summer. And I was going to use our tax refund money to do it. And we were due a big chunk back. We were due about $5,000. And I was going to take the boys and we were going to drive to Iowa. We lived in Des Moines for 5 years before we moved to Phoenix. So we still had a lot of friends there. So I was going to drive to Iowa. And we were going to stay with our friends, Tracy and Jeremy. And for a couple weeks, and then we were going to drive to Ohio and stay with my in-laws in Columbus or Newark for a week or two, and then head up to Cleveland and see my brother and maybe visit some family in Indiana. And I was going to do this all, and me and the boys in the minivan, and we were just going to take off, and that's what we were going to do this summer of 2012 with our tax return money. Well, it turns out that I got a notice about 2 weeks after I submitted my tax return, and somebody had stolen my identity. So I learned that we would not be receiving our tax refund when I anticipated that we would be receiving it. As a matter of fact, it would be at least 2 months, what they said. And I filed early. I filed in February. And so I religiously checked the website to find out the status. And I was trying to make plans. And I was like, oh, Lord, please let it be here before May. Please, please let it be here before May so we can do this trip. And it didn't come. It didn't come. It didn't come. So finally, I got on the phone with the IRS, and I was on hold for 2.5 hours before I finally got to speak to an actual person, and they told me that it would probably be more likely that the return would be sent to us in November. November. It was June or May. And I was just heartbroken. I was absolutely heartbroken that we were not going to be able to go on our trip. I was mad that somebody had stolen my identity. And what they had done is somebody had filed a tax return using my social security number and my maiden name. And that's how that happened. So I was pretty bummed. And that summer is the summer that I learned how to do web design, which is kind of funny, right? And that is what opened the doors to everything else as far as business is concerned. I can see like the domino effect that, and pretty much trace it back to that moment in time in which we did not receive our tax return and we had to cancel our trip that summer. And the Lord obviously had bigger plans for us and our lives. And so it's just so funny how hindsight is always 20/20, right? It's like the biggest cliche in the book, but it's really true. I can really, there's a lot of points in my life, a lot of times that I can look back and really pinpoint where the Lord was very active. And it was usually during times of trial or suffering. In this case, I was very, very sad and very, very disappointed that I was not going to be able to take this trip with my boys back to the Midwest. And sure enough, now I'm so glad that that happened because I would not be where I am today had that not occurred. So my point is that you really never know what journey the Lord is going to take you on. And this whole rosary making thing that I've picked up, my little hobby, I'm pretty sure I mentioned it last week. If you follow me on Instagram at Andrea Boring, you can see some of it. I started making rosaries primarily because one of my dearest friends was diagnosed with breast cancer a few weeks ago. And I have started doing novenas to St. Peregrine on Facebook Live, which has been very, very, very powerful, very moving experience. And I wanted to get her a Saint Peregrine rosary. And I like my rosaries a little blingy. And all the rosaries that I found with Saint Peregrine metal that I liked were very expensive. This kind of goes back to the whole web design thing too, because that's the reason I taught myself web design, is because I started having all these business ideas and blog ideas, and I didn't have the money to spend on a website or a blog designer. And so I figured out how to do it myself. And that's kind of how this rosary thing came about also, because I wasn't going to spend $150 on the St. Peregrine rosary. And so I ordered the metals in the process and went to Hobby Lobby and purchased some supplies, watched some videos on YouTube, and the rest is history. And I have enjoyed this so much, and it's such a nice break from coding and from designing, because it is something I can do when the kids are being a little bit needy. With web design and graphic design, I really have to concentrate, and I can't do that if the kids are being needy and if I don't have someone to watch them. And the rosaries, I can just sit on my counter and I can just string them, and it's very cathartic and very meditative. And I pray for everyone that I know is suffering as I string my rosaries, and it's been so awesome. So my whole point with this is really to follow your heart and follow what you enjoy, and you just really never know where the Lord's going to take you. So anyhow, I got a little bit longer than I anticipated there, but up next we have Jeannie Ewing. She is a fantastic author, and she has become a very dear friend. I cannot wait for you to get to know her a little bit better. And then after that, we'll have some more small business strategies and information for you. So stay tuned. and we'll be right back.
You're listening to a Breadbox Media podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much again for joining us today. This is Andrea Boring, your host of Catholic Women Create. And today it is my honor and privilege to introduce you to Jeannie Ewing. She is an author and a blogger and has an incredible story to share with us. Jeannie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Andrea.
Oh, you know what? It is... The Lord never fails to surprise me with the amazing women that He places in my life. And, you know, you and I have been Facebook friends just for a couple weeks, and just reading your blog and your story and looking over your books. And I just it's the Holy Spirit's definitely working in you, girlfriend, and in your beautiful children and your husband. So I'm just so happy you're here. Yay.
Thank you. Thank you for the encouragement, because sometimes I don't always see that.
It's always hard to see sometimes, you know. It's like I always pray. I always am like, Lord, just show me, tell me, show me. He doesn't listen, you know. He's not like He's my puppet or something. And it's so it's just works in mysterious ways, right?
Oh, absolutely, no question about that.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us where'd you grow up, and give us a little bit of a 411 on Jeannie Ewing.
Okay, well, I grew up and currently still live in northern Indiana. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad was the breadwinner in quality management. I had a very stable childhood. I have a younger brother who's like my total opposite. But we were close when we were little, and then kind of butted heads, you know, as siblings do. But my parents were always really good about raising my brother and me with the stability of the Catholic Church. It wasn't just about going to Mass on Sunday. We prayed as a family together. My dad was the president of St. Vincent de Paul Society at our parish for many years, and he took my brother and me to runs with him so that we could help deliver food or go to people's houses that needed their utility bills paid, all kinds of things. We volunteered for helping at the soup kitchen a lot. So, I mean, a lot of the works of mercy were really put into action in my family life as a young child. And I think that just made an impression on me into my adulthood. So I'm a cradle Catholic. I've never left the church. And then I met my husband. So I'm fast forwarding quite a bit. I met my husband when I was in graduate school studying school counseling. And we met on a Catholic match website. Well, it was kind of embarrassing because back then, this was 10 years ago, and it was still kind of taboo to do that, to meet somebody online. Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of friends who were very skeptical. How do you know he's not an axe murderer? How do you know he's not gonna... you know, he is who he says he is. And I said, well, I mean, we'll find out when he comes and meets my entire family, you know. So he flew out. He was 1,500 miles away, lived in New Mexico, and was working at Los Alamos National Lab, which is a nuclear facility run by the Department of Energy. And he flew out to Indiana to meet me and my family. We did this back and forth several times, and then got engaged, and we were married 10 months after we met online. So it was really more of a courtship that we had, and you know, long letters, long emails, long phone conversations. So we really became good friends and developed a deep friendship. Ben is a huge blessing in my life. He still is my best friend, and he has been so supportive of all of the things that God has led me to with speaking and writing. And it's just amazing how he just takes over with cooking dinner sometimes or taking care of the kids, stuff like that. So we've got two daughters. They both have special needs. My oldest daughter, Felicity, just turned 6, and she's got diagnosed anxiety, and she also has something called sensory processing disorder, which is pretty common. Every kid that has autism has a sensory processing disorder, but not every kid with SPD is autistic, if that makes sense. So she does not have autism, but she does some of the things that autistic kids do. She puts her hands over her ears sometimes if something's too loud. She can't filter. So if we're in a noisy room, she can't filter what to pay attention to, what to prioritize. So listening is pretty tough. Touch is a problem. Her tactile sense is an issue. So we give her OT, occupational therapy. And then my youngest daughter, Sarah, was born with a rare disease called Apert syndrome. It's a craniofacial condition that fuses the bones in the skull, and it's different for every kid that has it. Some of them have all of the bones fused. Some it's only one set of cranial plates. Hers was the bicoronal plate. And they also have fused fingers, fused toes. They usually have heart problems. Pretty much every system in the body can and is affected with Apert syndrome. So, and it's at different points in their lives. So for instance, she doesn't currently have any pulmonary issues, but she might later on in life. We just don't know. People with Apert undergo between 20 and 60 surgeries in their lifetime, and she's had 6 of them, and she's 3 years old. So the most major was on, well, to separate her fused plates in her skull. That was her first surgery when she was 6 months old. That was pretty tough. So, yeah, that was a huge surprise, and her birth story is really, really beautiful and powerful, and I write about it in my book, From Grief to Grace, because it was definitely due to Venerable Solanus Casey's intercession that it... Solanus Casey, he was a Capuchin, a type of Franciscan. So it's kind of a long story, but I write about it in my book, and I really believe because of his intercession, Sarah's birth went miraculously. That's what the doctor told me. And it was not my doctor. I had never met this doctor before. But she came and told me, your daughter's birth is a miracle. So you just kind of have to read that, because that's kind of a long story. But that's my intro, I guess. That's kind of the Reader's Digest version of where I came from and where I am now.
Oh, your daughters are just, oh, they're just beautiful. Now, Felicity, is she in school or are you homeschooling?
I'm homeschooling her.
And how is that going?
It's a challenge because she hates handwriting and she struggles with phonics and handwriting. But, you know, we can work at her pace with those things, and then she breezes through math and religion and science. So in that sense, it's really good. And I did that because we could not obtain a 504 plan for her, which is kind of like an IEP, but it's for kids that have other issues versus like a developmental disability like Sarah. Sarah easily has an IEP, and she's in special ed preschool, but I could not get help through the schools for Felicity, so I thought, well, I'm going to help her then until she can catch up with her peers at least.
Is it challenging? You said it was like handwriting, and you're pregnant, right?
I am, yeah.
Oh, and how far along are you?
Almost in my second trimester.
Oh.
So 13 weeks.
Do you get sick, or do you have like easy breezy pregnancies? Are you one of those women I hate?
No. Pregnancy is not easy for me. In fact, I'm a big baby, and I mean, I'm tired all the time, and I don't feel well, and I feel every ache and pain, every pain. Like any time my body's moving, whether it's my pelvic bone or something, I can feel everything. It's not comfortable, but it's worth it.
Yes,
because
it is.
We struggled with infertility with both of the girls. And then in between Sarah and this baby, we were not sure if we could have another baby. So this is a huge blessing.
So let's talk about your faith. You said you're a cradle Catholic, and you've never left the church. But did you have any kind of moments where you questioned the faith, or where you just struggled with it? And maybe tell us if that happened, how you overcame those moments.
Oh, sure. Of course I did. When I was in high school, I went to a very large public school. So I had gone to Catholic grade school, first through eighth grade. And my parents gave me a choice to go to the local Catholic high school or go to the public school that was in our district. And I chose the public school, maybe because I wanted something different. I don't really know why. And while there, I met very colorful people. I had a locker, like two lockers down from a Satanist. He was very openly so. And, you know, there were all different types of religions I met, like Eastern Indians that were Hindu, and there were some people that I went to school with that were atheists, and many, many, many varieties of Protestants. So when people found out I was Catholic, they asked me questions I couldn't answer. And I started to kind of question them myself. You know, the typical things. What about Mary? Why do you go to confession? Why do you kneel and stand and all this stuff at church? And do you worship idols? And there were lots of things I just was not well catechized in at the age of 14. And so for about 2 years, I just kind of slowly started to question, is this really my faith? Like, this is the faith of my parents. They handed it down to me. But is this where I belong? And so I became really good friends with a group of girls who were really strong Christians. They went to Bible studies and youth groups, but they were not Catholic. They were part of this big mega church in the city where I grew up. So I was very interested in their form of worship because they were very on fire for the Lord, and I didn't really see that necessarily at my church. So when I was 16, I asked my parents if I could go to church with them. And they reluctantly agreed with the condition that I would still go to Mass with them on Sundays and holy days. And I said, fine. So what I would do is I would go to Mass with my parents in the morning on Sundays, and then I would go to Sunday evening worship service with my friends, with the praise and worship bands. And it was all, you know, it was all really exciting at first. And I found myself falling in love with the Lord in a different way. But after a time, I felt kind of restless and disillusioned, like something's not right. There's something missing here. And I was very confused. So there was a period of time when I was about a junior in high school that I prayed, Lord, show me what is truth and what is the true church. And I really wanted to know that. And so I wrestled with this. At Mass, I just didn't feel, I didn't understand the Mass, but my interpretation as a junior in high school was, I'm not feeling anything. I'm not getting anything out of it. But I just really felt like there was something missing at these other churches. So one time I was at this Sunday evening service at the mega church, and it was their communion Sunday. And I'd never been there before at this point. And I was really kind of offended that they had one Sunday a month that was devoted to the communion, because obviously being a cradle Catholic, that was central to our faith. Every Mass I went to, with the exception of Good Friday service, had, and we still have communion then, but not, you know, the consecration. So anyway, I was immediately offended, and then I was very confused. So I was very internally conflicted. And then they had these ushers pass around these little trays of cups of grape juice and little pieces of bread. And everyone took one. Everybody did, but I didn't. I couldn't, and I didn't know why at the time. I could not explain why. I was compelled to just politely decline. And these ushers insisted, and it started to become a scene where people started turning around and looking at me, like, what's wrong with you? And I was very, very confused and very embarrassed, you know. And at that point, I felt really offended. Like, this is your idea of communion, but I couldn't explain all of it. And so there was just this big storm, I guess, this conflict going on inside of me. But I wasn't talking to anybody about it except for the Lord. And so the very next Sunday I went to Mass, and I was crying, and I was just like, Lord, I don't understand. You know, I really am trying to find you. And it was during the consecration, and I lifted my eyes, and I knew it was Jesus. It was like he lifted this veil from my heart. And I knew instantly that the Eucharist really was the body, blood, soul, and divinity. And from that moment, I decided this is my home, and this is what's missing in all these other churches. And they've got some good things going on, but they're missing Jesus, and I want him. I want to be where he is and where I can receive him. So that was really the biggest hurdle I've had to overcome in terms of questioning my faith. I did question my faith in a different way after Sarah was born, but that was more of a, wow, I didn't know that you could be so cruel, God, which of course he's not. But that was my initial reaction, was how could you allow this to happen? So that was a different type of wrestling with my faith. I don't know if that answers your question, but that was really the only major point in my faith journey where I had to really discover where I belonged and what was home.
You know, it's interesting you brought this up. We have a family friend right now who is going through a crisis of faith, although she wouldn't say that. She's she's decided she's no longer Catholic and she's going to join a Bible Baptist church. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with Meg Hunter-Kilmer. She's a hobo for Christ and an amazing Catholic speaker. And so she goes to Holy Mass every day and she takes a holy hour every day. So she's like one of the most holiest people I know. So I'm like, I'm going to message her and be like, can you pray for Megan? And so I messaged her and I kind of told her briefly what was going on. And she said, let her parents know that the most important thing that is that she knows Jesus. And she said, sometimes Catholics need to become Protestant to find him before they can experience him in his fullness. And I was like, wow. And, you know, it's, that really, really spoke to me. And it sounds like that's similar to what you didn't become a full Protestant, but you know, you experienced, what it would be like, and there was something missing, and you didn't know what it was until you asked sincerely with a sincere heart, and you were prepared for the answer too.
I think the problem with some Catholics who leave the church for Protestantism is they get sucked into the rhetoric that they might hear from other Protestants, maybe even some of whom are fallen away Catholics. Oh yeah, the Catholic Church is, you know, the false church and it's heretical and all this stuff. And then they believe it without really investigating it. That's something I didn't do. I didn't accept what the Protestants said about the Catholic Church. But again, I had a good basis at home where my parents kept saying, my mom, for instance, she kind of used this logic. She goes, okay, if you wanted to learn about the Baptist church, would you go to a Methodist pastor and ask him? No. So she's like, why would you listen and accept what a Protestant is saying about the Catholic church? Why don't you go to a Catholic source? And so again, when I had this kind of mini conversion, if you will, I did. I started devouring all of these Catholic apologetics books and which really helped me seg into college and be able to defend my faith that way when I was a young adult.
And it's something that so many of us are challenged on. And I became a full on Mormon when I was 19 and, you know, left the faith, and it took me 13 years to come back. And it was a pretty intense reversion that I had. And it's just so interesting how, one of the things that it's like, when you look at prayer and you look at how the Lord answers prayers, and I'm a full believer, like how you asked, you know, the Lord to show you, I did the same. And, because it wasn't easy to come back after 13 years and, you know, to humble yourself in confession and, you know, all those fun, exciting things. And, it's just, and he answered my prayer. And I just feel, and I don't know if it's a naive way to feel or think, but I honestly feel like if so many people would really and truly in their heart and soul ask the Lord for the answer, I don't think he would ever not answer.
But I agree. Totally agree. That's interesting you say that about Mormonism, because I had a really close friend. I think he wanted to date me now that I look in retrospect, but he was a very strong Mormon. And he would talk to me about the Book of Mormon, and he even had it in his car when we'd like hang out with a group of people, and he would drop me off at my house. And I'm like, I don't know how you can believe that this was revealed to, like, this was heavenly revelation. How can you accept that? And, you know, but then he would try to convince me, well, it is the truth, because he had a sister-in-law who was a convert to Mormonism from Catholicism. And it's so funny how all of these different people came into my life and tried to convince me of a different path to truth, but somehow the Lord kept me grounded, I guess, in really seeking it and finding it. And somehow there must have been a grace that enveloped me in some way, because I have no other explanation as to why I didn't just say, oh yeah, that's really interesting, and I think I might follow that path. I mean, I don't know. That's really interesting, because Mormonism is very different from Catholicism.
Totally different. And, you know, but you were talking about, and we're totally, sorry, this is kind of going crazy, but you just got to go with it. But we were talking about, you were talking about the feeling, right? The feeling. And the feeling that you got when you were at the Protestant church, and whatever that feeling might be. And, you know, our friend Megan, she said to her mother, the one that's going to join this Bible Baptist church, I've never felt closer to Jesus than while I'm at this church. And she's well catechized. I mean, she's very well catechized. Like, And that's why it's such a shock. And then, you know, what you said about the whole feeling, and I had the feeling too. I actually fully believe that the Lord used Mormonism to save my life. And that's a whole other story. But yeah, the feeling, and it's such a fascinating thing, because our culture, right, especially now, and everyone, I mean, it's all about how you feel. But without, you know, how do you take the feeling and not dismiss it, because you don't want to dismiss feelings, but be able to look past it and look beyond it to really finding the truth. So,
well, I have a friend who's a psychologist, and she's actually a Mennonite. We live in a very Anabaptist area, and we have amazing dialogue about Catholicism. I really believe she's on the path to conversion. But anyway, she and I talk about this very subject quite a bit. And one of the things that we talk about is that, like you said, feelings should be affirmed. They should not be negated or repressed in any way. However, we should not make decisions in our life based on emotion. Because, you know, if that were the case, then why would anybody stay married? Because every marriage has rocky times, some very much tumultuous times. And then, you know, if you think about it, you don't always love your kids. I mean, you do you'd love them, but you don't feel it. It's not a fuzzy feeling. It's not like necessarily an ecstatic type of euphoria, right? And so she and I talk about how important it is to acknowledge your feelings and kind of see, like, where is this coming from, especially if it's a negative emotion, fear, anger, especially guilt and shame, things like that. Like, where is this coming from? Is there a wound that's not been healed in my life? And how can I, and especially for me as a Catholic, how can I bring that to confession? How can I bring that to the sacraments or spiritual direction too? And obviously to prayer for anybody that's a Christian. But then, of course, the positive feelings, we shouldn't always say that, well, we know this is right because it feels right. Because sometimes doing the right thing doesn't feel right, right? I mean, that's something I'm teaching my kids. Well, you know, when my oldest daughter's like, I don't feel like putting my dishes in the sink. Well, honey, guess what? Jesus didn't feel like hanging on the cross and being in pain. But that's what love is. It's a sacrifice. And so, I mean, that sounds cliched, but those aren't the exact words that I use with her. But the point being that that's a reminder to me as well, that I have to make decisions every day of my life that aren't necessarily what feels good or fuzzy or warm, but I know it's the right thing.
I love that. I really like that, this discussion and how it's going, because I don't really, I run into this a lot, you know, with other people, and especially those who aren't Catholic, the whole feeling thing. And so this is, I think the Lord's using us right now to get some good stuff out there, because I really like what you said, especially when you talk about your child, and you don't, it's so true. It's just so stinking true. I just can't even, it's a cliche, but it's not, because sometimes the most basic truths sound cliche, but that's because they're basic and we forget that and we get lost in it. So anywho, okay. Moving on. Tell me, so you're an author and a blogger, and that is your business that we're going to talk about today. You write at FromGriefToGrace.com, and why don't you tell us about that?
Well, I have two blogs. The first one I started is called lovealonecreates.com, and that was basically to chronicle Sarah's journey with her rare disease. And that's turned into more of a place where I kind of post any kind of musings about motherhood and the difficulties and the joys of raising a child with special needs. And then From Grief to Grace happened because of my book, actually. So the way I came to even write the book and have it published traditionally through Sophia Institute Press was providential. I don't know how else to say it. I don't have a background in writing and editing in terms of credentials. I never wrote for, you know, I was never a journalist or anything like that. But because I blog for Catholic Exchange, my editor there, he asked me one time, have you thought of writing a book? Because a lot of your articles have a common thread and it seems to really resonate with the readers. And so I really took this to prayer and spiritual direction. It took about 6 months of formation to really discern, oh, I think the Lord is calling me to write a book about grief, which was not something I would have chosen. But it's something that looking, you know, like I said, in prayer, I was looking in retrospect of my life, and there was a thread, this common theme of loss. It wasn't necessarily just death, like a physical death, but we have addiction and mental illness in my family all over. We've lost people to death because of those things. And then I ran a grief group for teenagers when I was doing my internship for school counseling. They had suicides they were dealing with and gang deaths and all kinds of things that were very unusual that particular time that I was there. And so there were lots of different things. And then, of course, when Sarah was born, that was a different type of grief. And I thought, you know, I think that we need to understand what grief really is. It's not just about mourning someone who has died, but it could be mourning a death of anything, of losing a job, maybe divorce, maybe losing a dream that you had, like I had to do, the dream of what I thought my family would be like. So that's really how my book writing kind of took off. And from there, I've done lots of radio interviews, speaking engagements. I've done some webinars, webcasts, things like that. And that's kind of become my, I don't know if you want to say official niche, but that is really what I do talk about most of the time, is redemptive suffering and what are some key principles spiritually that can help us to move through the grief, not around it or not above or below it, but how do we move within it? So that's really kind of the crux of the work that I do, the work that the Lord's moving me. And I do have other books that kind of follow that theme as well. I have a meditation journal for caregivers. I have a devotional that's coming out pretty soon. And then my husband and I are working on a parenting book. And then I'm also working on another book by myself about waiting and how waiting can feel very painful. But what are the hidden opportunities spiritually, and what are the spiritual fruits that can blossom if we wait with expectant faith, kind of like entering into Advent, right? How do we live Advent all the time? So this is just kind of, I guess you could say it's a spiritual charism that the Lord has given me. And part of that does involve sharing our story, our family's journey. So it's kind of all interwoven.
What would you say, as far as writing is concerned, what's your favorite part about writing, or how do you come up with new ideas? Like you touched on it a little bit, but you know, as I'm writing myself, I find that it's a lot harder than I ever expected. So especially a book, blogging. I've been doing blogging for like 5 years, and you know, coming up with 500 words of just a random topic, I can do that with my eyes closed. But tying it all together, what's your favorite part about, in particular, you know, writing a book? I think we have a lot of bloggers that probably listen, and a lot of aspiring authors. So I'd really love for, you know, your take as far as writing, you know, a novel or a book is concerned.
You're right. Writing a book is a different, whole different animal. I think if you're going to write a book successfully, you have to really have a lot of grit. So you have to get through the spiritual attack, the doubts, the dry spells. You have to be able to persevere when you don't feel inspired. You have to be able to write when you are afraid, like, oh my gosh, what if this? And then you have all maybe this committee in your head that's telling you, well, this person's going to judge you if you write that, or you shouldn't write that because the world will know this dark secret. I mean, you have to really, really stay close to the Holy Spirit and just write uncensored and allow him to take over. Like every time I wrote my book, every time I sat down to write From Grief to Grace, which is currently my magnum opus, but whenever I would sit down to write it, I always prayed to the Holy Spirit first because I wanted him to guide my words. And I knew the temptations and the attacks would come, and I wanted to be able to combat them, but with his help, of course. So I really think that it takes a lot of discipline and it takes a lot of resolve. I never knew what I was made of in terms of that inner strength until I completed the book. I mean, truly, it really is like giving birth, because you have this period where you're actually writing the book, the writing process, and then you go through the first edits and the second edits. And then, you know, of course, then it moves on to the formatter and the marketing person, all these different people. And that's like the pregnancy. That, again, it goes back to that theme of waiting. And sometimes it's so excruciating because you're like, I worked so hard on this. I just want it to be done. I just want the finished product in my hand and to be able to go out there and tell people about it and share the story. But then you have to wait. You have to wait sometimes a year. I mean, for me, it was a little over a year before it was actually released to the public and getting endorsements and finally, you know, all of these major radio stations were kind of rolling in wanting to talk to me about it. And that was the birth. And there's kind of a catharsis, like a relief when you actually, quote, give birth to your baby, your book, because it's very personal when you're a writer. A lot of times we're sharing, especially nonfiction writers. That's what I'm talking about right now. When you're a nonfiction writer, you're really bearing your soul in a lot of ways. I mean, even if you're not telling your whole life story and it's not like spilling this memoir, which most of us kind of weave our stories into certain topics that we write about. I am definitely one of those people, but it's very frightening when you realize, oh, anybody anywhere has access to this information. It's like you feel this emotional transparency that's frightening because you know that you're going to be vulnerable to the critics, but truly the worst critic is yourself. And sometimes I think it's hard as an author. The whole journey is difficult. It really reveals to oneself what you're made of, what you're capable of, and really what do you still need to work on? What are the things within you that you need to bring to the sacraments? And where are these areas of weakness or vulnerability that maybe reveal a wound that hasn't been healed? So again, I think that the process of writing and having it published, it's very personal. It's a really tough journey. But if somebody feels called to write, then the Lord will make it happen and he will guide that person with his own hand, like he did for me and he is for you.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I thought our story was, you know, it's always funny because I thought our story was over 2.5 years ago, and I sat down to write and the words wouldn't come. Nothing would come. And I'm like, oh, come on. Like, I had the title. I'm like, I bought the domain name. I was like ready to rock. And I sat down and I could not put together a sentence. And Then we got pregnant with our second set of twins and they were born early. And it was pretty much my worst nightmare, you know, coming true. And then, you know, everything obviously is fine. And, I've got a couple of an almost 9 month old babies now at home. But it's like, it was 3 months ago, 4 months ago when I felt compelled to sit down and write, and I did. And before I knew it, I had chapter, and I was like, I always was worried about the not having enough material, right? And, I was able to outline it. I was able to do all of these things, and now I'm kind of stalled and I do feel the attacks. What would you say is the most challenging part of all of your writing endeavors right now?
Well, certainly because I have two kids with special needs, my life is very hectic with atypical busyness. So, you know, as a mom, any moms that are listening, you know what it's like when you just have the typical developmental challenges of raising children. And then when they get into school, you've got all these extra things that they have to do, fundraisers and PTA meetings. And then they're probably involved in some extracurricular. Well, we've got the typical things, but then we've got all this extra stuff. So Sarah has, all of her doctors are out of town. I have to drive an hour and a half to 3 hours from my house to get to all of her doctors, all of her specialists. And she has about a dozen of them. So we do a lot of driving out of town for doctor's appointments. We have weekly occupational therapy appointments for both of my girls. Sarah also has a music therapist every week that she sees. We have a respite care person that comes in. And then because it's through the Medicaid waiver program through my state of Indiana, we have to do case management meetings. And so I'm constantly either on the phone with some kind of specialist or some kind of case manager, or I'm filling out paperwork or filing that paperwork, or we're traveling somewhere. So that's a challenge when it comes to, I'm drained. So when I actually might have the time and the opportunity to write, like you said, sometimes the words don't come because I'm so exhausted. However, it's so funny how God works, at least with me, because my writing process is very messy and I am not a messy person. I love regiment routines. I like things to be methodical. I like to start and then finish nice and neatly. But what God is showing me and revealing to me through my life is, you know, life is not tidy. It doesn't fit in a box. It is going to be messy, and that's okay, because that's how the Holy Spirit works. In unexpected surprises, in those moments throughout our day, like you're saying today, wow, God's really using you. Well, I pray that He does every day. I ask Him to, and I never know from one day to the next how that's going to pan out, what that's going to look like. And so when it comes to my writing, and this is no lie, sometimes I'm driving my van wherever we're going, and I get an inspiration. I have to pull over. I'm not kidding you. My girls know this. I have to pull over, and I have a notebook and pen in my purse, and I write down as much as I am able to get out that I know will jog my memory or jog the inspiration later when I have time to write. So that's one thing that I do. That's kind of, I have all these separate, you know, these little pieces of paper, these separate pieces of paper floating around my house that I stick in my journal. And then I kind of gather those and collect them into organized thoughts when I have more time. But, so the writing process for me is challenging because of that, because my life is, my primary vocation is to care for my children and to make sure that I'm caring for my husband too. And writing is very much kind of like 10 minutes here or 3 seconds there kind of thing. But it comes together.
And you create beautiful things. And I'm going to totally go buy your book today because...
Oh, bless your heart. Well, I hope you like it.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know, because it's similar in theme to what I'm working... Not too similar, a little bit. But it's hard because I want to read these books. Like the other book is Hallie Lord's new book, The Other Side of Fear. And that one's similar too, a little bit. And I'm like, but I don't want it to influence any of my writing. So it's kind of like, you want to read it because you want to see how other people write, but you don't, you know what I mean? There's kind of like that fine line.
Well, here's something I would suggest, because I am very much influenced by other writers. I don't necessarily steal their ideas. You know, it's not like plagiarism, but I will tell you truthfully, I read so many books because I review a lot of books, and there are lots of other books that I like to read that are more classical literature. And especially like the early church fathers and early theologians, things like that. But they very much influence my writing. And in fact, sometimes when I feel stalled, like when you're talking, I can't write. I'm just having this dry spell. Sometimes I have those too, but then I might read something and I'm not even thinking about it. Again, it's not something I'm expecting. I'm not looking for it, but I'm reading something and then I get an absolutely huge inspiration that fits in with whatever I'm writing about, whatever my book is about. So this book on waiting, one of my friends gave me an article written by Henry Nouwen about the spirituality of waiting. And it was like this burst of inspiration that helped me write my own thoughts, but it was based on the fact that I read something that opened my eyes to a new insight that I had not ever had before. So I think it's actually helpful to read a book that's similar in theme to what you are writing about, even if it's in a small way, because you may very well glean something, or maybe the Holy Spirit will use those words to reveal to you something you hadn't thought of before. And that's something that I find when people review my book, the things that they talk about or the insights they've gained from it are, I never would have fathomed. I couldn't have imagined. They're things that I didn't even realize as I was writing could be gleaned from that, from what I wrote. And so that's how God works. That's the Holy Spirit. That's how He moves. And that's a beautiful thing, because then you will find you're going to pay it forward. When your book comes out, your readers will read something. They will be inspired. Maybe not all of your readers are writers, but they'll be inspired to do something with their lives that you may never realize has made such an impact.
So powerful. Girl, I bet you are an amazing speaker. So do you, where do you speak usually? Do you just speak in locally, or do you ever do like large conferences or anything like that?
All over. So I've done anywhere from, I've spoken to at colleges, I've spoken to high schools, I've spoken at churches, Women's Evening of Reflections. I have gone to, it's called First Steps of Indiana. It's our state's early childhood intervention program. And they had like an in-service day for all of their regional caseworkers and special ed coordinators and school psychologists. And so I've spoken there to them. I do travel out of town to do speaking engagements also. So it's really a variety of secular and religious venues.
What would you say are some of your best ways to market yourself as an author and a speaker?
That's a great question, because I don't know that I've figured it out myself. What I would say is everything where I've gotten today is really a lot of trial and error. So when you're becoming an entrepreneur, you really have to take risks you've never taken before. That's not to say that you should be impulsive or overzealous and not really discern if this is what God wants you to do. It's more about, oh my gosh, I'm so scared. I've never done this before, but I know that God's asked me to do it. I'm just going to do it. And then you learn through that process. That's what I've done. Now, in terms of marketing and publicity and selling your work, well, for me, it's a lot of it's networking. So for instance, in July, I was able to go to the Catholic Marketing Network conference near Chicago in Schaumburg, Illinois. And there I met, you know, acquisitions editors and publishers and lots of people from EWTN media and radio stations and even small business owners that were Catholics. And it's through the conversations. So I really think that at least for me, and this maybe is part of the counselor in me and maybe the mom in me too. For me, it's about building relationships. So every person that I talk to, like, including you today, right? So I believe truly every conversation I have where the Lord is present, He's moving in that relationship. And maybe there might be a future collaboration with that person, or maybe something in that conversation will plant a seed in me or in the other person or in both of us, because I have so many conversations with people that are moved to similar work when it comes to, let's say, journeying with those who are suffering. So being a companion, walking alongside them. And yet they feel called in different ways to fulfill that. And sometimes I think, well, I wonder what this is all about. But that's the beauty, I think, of surrendering to the movements of the Holy Spirit, is saying, well, I don't have to know right now, because I know that much of what God is doing is mysterious to me. I just have to trust, and I have to say yes. I have to give my fiat every day. And then I have to just respond in the present moment. So to me, that all kind of ties in with the marketing and the publicity and the promotion, because I don't have a background in any of those things. And I am not a salesperson by nature. I don't walk up to random people and say, here's my business card. You want to hire me for a speaking engagement? But somehow every time I pray before I go to a conference or before, I talk to somebody or do an interview like this, I know that the Lord's going to move in that. And oftentimes some fruit does come from that. There is some question that someone has, like, oh, could you help me with this? Or, oh, I have a friend that's grieving over this. Or, oh, I know somebody I'd love to connect you with. I mean, it's amazing how when the Lord becomes kind of your marketing professional, seriously, I mean,
I love that.
It really moves in ways that He moves mountains in ways that we cannot.
Oh, I love that. The Lord, let the Lord be your marketing professional. I absolutely love that. It was very, you just put things into perspective in a very good way for me. A nice hefty dose of perspective for me. So thank you for that. And I am just so grateful for all the knowledge you shared with us today. And you have so much more to share. So everyone, I really encourage you to check out Jeannie Ewing. Where is the best place to find you? What website? Where should people go to find out all about you and everything? Which one? You tell us.
Well, like my virtual resume, so to speak. So I have videos and I've got samples of my speaking and stuff like that, would be lovealonecreates.com/about-me.
They can find you there and mm-hmm. follow you on Facebook and Instagram, I'm sure, mm-hmm. and Twitter. And you also came bearing gifts today for our listeners. Tell us what you are offering to give away.
I have a copy of my meditation journal and a copy of From Grief to Grace.
That is so wonderful. Thank you so much for being so generous. And I wish I could enter and win it myself. So anyhow, Jeannie, thank you so much for your time today and for joining us. And I'm just so excited for you and to see where the Lord takes you, and especially on this new journey of pregnancy and bringing new life into the world. And you're just such an inspiration to all of us. So thank you.
Well, Andrea, it's been such a blessing to talk to you. And I just feel like it's been like talking to an old friend today. And I just look forward to seeing how God will blossom our friendship.
Yes, I see good things. I see good things. So,
me too.
All right, everyone. Don't forget to check out Jeannie Ewing at lovealonecreates.com and pick up a copy of one of her two books or both of her books. And we will be right back with our next small business segment.
If you like what you're hearing, become a friend of the show. Visit breadboxmedia.com and click Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone, to Catholic Women Create. Wasn't Jeannie just fantastic? I really, really enjoyed our conversation. I think she has such a wonderful perspective on everything. And her story is just, it's just so powerful. And it never ceases to amaze me how the Lord uses our individual stories to bring others closer to Him. I think it is probably the single most powerful evangelization tool He has given us here on earth. And it never ceases to amaze me. I really can't say anything else about it. Every day, I hear something new and something inspirational happens, and I'm just like, whoa, dude, God, you're pretty amazing. You can just go ahead and knock that off anytime. Just kidding. So anyhow, so thank you so much, Jeannie, for joining us. Don't forget to head over to CatholicWomenCreate.com and enter the giveaway. And we're going to chat now a little bit about branding. Last several episodes of our segment on how to start your online business, we've talked about branding. We've talked about the who, and now we're going to talk about the visual aspect of branding, fonts and colors. And if you are looking to launch your online business, what I do whenever I launch a new business, which is kind of funny because I just launched, I just launched a little rosary shop. Don't ask. A few days ago, I started making rosaries to feed some more creative, urges that I had. And so I created a new brand, and this is exactly what I did when I created my new brand, is I always do this for every single one of my businesses, and I start a secret Pinterest pin board. Nobody else can see it except for my business partner, because she sees everything, because she has amazing perspectives on everything. And I just start pinning. I usually start with colors. So I'll do a search for color palettes. And then next, I will look for fonts. And so I will usually pin a script or display font, and then a serif font, a few serif fonts, and a few sans serif fonts. And after that, I will go to our stock photo account at Deposit Photos. And they actually have a pretty good subscription plan right now. One we got in was super expensive, but now it's pretty affordable. I want to say $29 a month, and you get, 30 images a month, I think. Don't quote me on that. But anyhow, so I'll go there and I'll search for things that inspire me. I start with me first, and then I start looking and thinking about my target client. And this is where I kind of start working backwards. So then I think about my target client and who she is. Generally, all of my target clients are women. And I think about what she would like. And so I start pinning different photos. I'll pin photos of, my business, what I'm doing. So in this case, in my rosary making business, I was pinning pictures of rosaries, pictures of the Blessed Mother. I was pinning photos of statues, of pretty churches, all of those things is what I was pinning to my secret Pinterest vision board. And then I went back and I started doing the process of what would my target client like as far as fonts go. And this is where it kind of gets interesting, because in my mind, I was seeing black and white and a very simple sans serif font. And sans serif, there's a difference between serif and sans serif. Here's a little side note. Sans serif means there's no little tails of any sort on them. And I'm sorry, I got that backwards. Sans serif means there are tails. Sans serif means without tail. So without any kind of little tail on the end. Think of like when you're writing cursive, like that little loop, you know, that you would write when you're doing like an L or an E or something. Anyhow. So, this time around when I was branding my rosary hobby boutique, that's what I had in my brain. But then I'm like, okay, this is what I like and this is what I envision. But is this what my target client wants? And the answer I got to that was no. And I went and I looked at all of these successful crafters, many of whom have been guests here on Catholic Women Create. I went to their websites and I went and looked at the number of pins for different fonts. And, you know, the script font is kind of key. That trendy, kind of messy script. And I was like, all right. I'm like, it kind of went totally counter of what I was envisioning. But when I thought about it and I thought really hard about who my target client was and what that individual would like, I really had no choice in the matter. Same thing with colors. So I was going to just do black and white. But then I was like, okay, is that target client like me and would like black and white? And the answer to that again was no. Most of them are feminine women who really like girly things because my rosaries have bling and they're sparkly and they're colorful. And I'm like, okay. So I ended up with a scripty gradient blue green font choice, and my shop is called Grace Plus Glam. So anyhow, that exercise, just to walk you through exactly what I did when I was branding my business. The first key is the who. The second key that you work into is figuring out the design elements. And then once you have all of these things in place, you know, start playing around in Canva or PicMonkey, playing with fonts, and just don't be scared. You can't mess anything up. Start a free subscription to Photoshop. You can do a free 30-day subscription to Photoshop Creative Cloud. And then after 30 days, it's only $9.99 a month, and you get Lightroom too. So if you're going to be taking your own photos for your blog, Lightroom is a great tool to have. It's really a fantastic set of tools. So that is what you do there. And that's my little small business strategy tips today. That's how to brand your business online. And really just keep in mind, you know, it's not about you. It's about them. And what appeals the most to your ideal target client? What is going to bring them into your online boutique and make them want to stay? Not only is it your gorgeous, beautiful products, but it's also how you visually represent yourself. So, friends, that's all I have today. Thanks for joining us for episode 9 of Catholic Women Create. And thank you again to our wonderful guest, Jeannie Ewing. She was absolutely delightful, and I'm so grateful she was here with us. And I hope you all have a very, very blessed week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.